Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our 8th series of the year for webinars. So this one is going to be quite frank and quite straightforward, a little bit longer than normally, so telling it like it is, a good update for all landlords and agents with legislation and a lot of changes that's happened recently in the last 12 to 18 months. We're just going to be going through them in terms of a snapshot, in terms of a summary. Judging by the audience, numbers are climbing, 400 plus, so thank you for everybody on the phone, on the webinar. I can see that 80-90% of attendees are landlords, so thank you for that. And the rest, 10-15%, looks like a mixture of businesses from for letting agents. For everybody that's not been to a webinar who's new to this, you can hear me, I can't hear you. There's a panel on the right-hand side where you can click and ask questions at any time. So hopefully I'll go through some questions as we go along through the topics and the subjects. If not, we'll try and answer all questions at the end in a Q&A session. And then if no questions are answered, then we'll feed back and answer every single question within the next 24 to 48 hours. Okay, so I'm Sim Secon, MD of Legal for Landlords. We specialise within the private rented sector, in particular for tenant referencing, legal services and general insurances, and our core focus and driver is protection and protection for the landlord. Brief agenda for today, facts and figures and updates of where we're up to currently. Updates in terms of legislation and what's happened, how that can impact landlords and letting agents, because it's astounding still the amount of updates that have been released, no matter how small the impact that these may have, and there's still a lot of queries happening every single day, and we can't expect every single landlord and agent to keep up to speed exactly with what those impacts may be, so I'm just going to fly over them. Brief summary with top tips, question and answer, and as always, a prize giveaway, which I'll ask a question at the end, and if you answer that question as soon as possible, we'll put all the correct answers in a pot and pick out one of those winners for a prize giveaway. So you can do that again by the box on the right-hand side. You can click there to ask any questions at any time. Okay, kicking off. We covered some of these facts and figures. So all facts and figures that we have here, there's not enough room on the slide to put the sources in, but if anybody wants to know where these sources, where we've got this information and stats from, then obviously please let us know. So rental properties in the UK, so we're looking at 2 in 10 households currently at this moment in time. So that number is growing. It's grown extensively in the last 10 years, and we can only see that growing further and further. And there's lots of stats touted around by 2025. That'll go up to 25 to 30% plus of households in the UK will be rented. There's circa 1.7 million plus landlords in the UK currently, and that's only going to grow. And then this is one of the most interesting stats that I looked at was, I think it was Direct Line Insurance that did this one. 93% of landlords own one buy-to-let property, whereby they're maybe amateur landlords or accidental landlords or they've inherited it, but 93% of landlords only own one property. Some further stats, average rents, this is from our rental index from tenant referencing across the UK, so we see London is at this moment in time, this is last month's stats, is £915 average rent per month. Obviously, some areas it's a hell of a lot higher. Outside of London, as we like to class the UK as two types of property markets, one is inside the M25, one is outside, and that's circa £200 less per calendar month. So it fluctuates a lot from 720 to 770 per calendar month. The other interesting one is average length of tenancy is 20 months. Now, we haven't defined the stats for furnished or unfurnished. However, unfurnished properties have a longer tenancy length, but we couldn't get stats on that. So we just drilled it to an average of 20 months. So tenants are staying slightly longer than normal. And the other industry average as well from ourselves, from void periods, this is from our insurance book, is 15 days for void periods. In order that properties had its inventory, it's been relisted, remarketed by the agent or by the landlord, and within two and a half weeks, a tenant is being found, reference checked, and moved in within that period. So void periods are at the lowest that we've seen over the last 12 to 18 months as well. So bear in mind, the supply and the demand from a tenant's perspective and for landlords and agents releasing properties on the market. So ultimately, rents are increasing in terms of the volume of rental properties in the market. We've seen a lot more dwellings turn into rentals, accidental or amateur landlords come into the marketplace. And we're seeing the rise of generation rent, and there's obviously a lot of hype and there's a lot of media. And the government are trying to control this as much as possible in terms of the market as a whole. But it's, unless something drastically happens to interest rates and lending in the economy, rental is the next viable option, and that'll be the next big culture change that we're seeing now. It's already happening, so it's just going to become more and more predominant. I think hence why in the property PR and in the media this week, it's all about trying to introduce rental controls and caps. So there's a lot of debate happening on that now, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Okay, legislation updates. So we've had Deregulation Act, which has been huge, and this impacts repairs and deposits, Section 21s. We've had the amnesty with deposits, that came on the back of that as well. We've had right to rent legislation, prescribed information, smoke alarms, carbon dioxide monitors, more legislation on repairs, EPC gas safety certification. We've had a new Section 8 as well released this year from April, which not a lot of landlords or agents know. A lot of councils have introduced licensing schemes. The Welsh Housing Act have put this throughout the whole of Wales. So every single landlord in Wales has to have a license. I think that comes into play 23rd of November. So if you have got a property in Wales, you need to make sure you have a license, otherwise you could face a fine from the Welsh Council. Insurance premium tax, you might think, why does this impact us? But obviously it's increased a hell of a lot, and that's increasing again from October. Everyone who has a household or property will have some sort of insurance on it, whether it's buildings insurance, legal protection, rent protection. So that's increasing again from October. We've absorbed that increase into all of our insurance products and services, but that's just something to bear in mind. So next section, I'll just go into detail on some of those snapshots and, you know, telling it exactly as it is. And this is all about getting it right first time and making sure that you understand legislation, you know where your responsibilities lie as a landlord. And obviously, as a letting agent, being offering that professional service and that added value to your landlord, that is, you know, to justify extra your management service fee, because a lot of landlords don't understand it. I think it's making the invisible visible from a letting agent's perspective of exactly what you do. And from a landlord's point of view, this is not just something that you can just do as a hobby. You need to be dedicated and really on the ball with it in terms of information and run it as a business, because these small things can have really big impacts. So we've had many examples now of, typically tenants in arrears are at the highest ever. We've seen evictions rise quarter on quarter, year on year, via Ministry of Justice stats, which are openly available for anybody. You know, if you're in a couple of months arrears, one of the options is serving a Section 8. That's obviously worst case scenario. And taking it that far, it's looking at that point of view and saying, have I served Section 8 correctly? Have I used the correct notice? Worst case scenario, it gets to court, you've used the wrong notice, case gets dismissed, you have to start all over again. That's a lot of emotional energy and a lot of stress, cost, time and money. So we're all about minimising that risk as much as possible. You know, there'll be some agents or landlords that will say, well, you know, we've got an existing Section 8, I've already served it, I want to go ahead on it. Our best advice will be to reserve and start again, because we want to ultimately minimise that risk. But at the end of the day, when it comes to that court and the judge sees that Section 8, it could be judge of discretion and saying, you know, you've used the wrong Section 8. This is now new Section 8 with X amount of grounds in. It came in effect from the 6th of April. You know, there's a prescribed information form in there as well. It's got landlords' names and addresses. There's different types of grounds, and it's got specific wording in. So every single agent and landlord needs to have this in their arsenal, or obviously work with somebody like ourselves in order to get this achieved and get it right first time to minimise that risk, because nobody wants to go to court and have the wrong paperwork. It happens, and there's a lot of pop-up companies that are trying to do this or trying to advise, and or you download templates, but you just need, from the internet, but you need to ensure that you've got the best advice possible moving forward. Otherwise, it will leave you in a lot of heartache. So that's a big one that came in this year, and obviously, you know, we're in September now, so it's almost 6 months later down the line. You need to ensure that you're using the correct Section 8. So that this one really came under the radar. You know, we only had a couple of weeks' notice on this coming in, so it's like the government snuck this one in terms of the Housing Act. The second huge one is register deposits. This is all down to the Deregulation Act and the repairs in Section 21, so it all links into play. So this is all tenancies beginning on or after October 2015. So this is almost this is almost a year now. You know, landlords have to have valid energy and gas safety certificates. They need to provide these to the tenants. They need to have an updated guide to rent booklet, which you can download off any government website. There's a specific Section 21 6A now. So there's you know, we've covered these extensively in existing webinars, so you can access them from our online portal if you have a login. We have a new resource centre, so all agents can log into MyNative and get this from the resource centre. Any landlord who registers with us has free access to all our webinars, marketing materials and information, and they can listen to any webinars that we've done. So that's a new thing that we launched last month. So a recording of this webinar will be on the resource centre, I think by the latest by Monday, from our marketing team, and all other webinars that we've done for the rest of the year are all easily accessible there. So Prescribed Information Deregulation Act is actually one of them, and we covered that for a good half an hour, so I'm just going to fly over the other points. You know, the Section 21 has to have full landlord's names, addresses, it can't have just the agent's name in there now. And the repairs, there's a whole section about repairs, about, you know, you should adhere to repairs, answer them swiftly, get them fixed, get them repaired, because this could hold you back and limit you from serving Section 21 and getting that moving forward. And then obviously you have to have your deposits registered as well. So it's been a huge change on that now. So we're still seeing a lot of fallout and a lot of issues caused on that. We do get agents or landlords contacting us, and they don't want to return deposits because they've been incorrectly, they haven't been actually registered in the first place. So that issue happens daily. Which is obviously a strange circumstance to face yourself in. You're in arrears, you want to get your tenant out, but you haven't registered a deposit. But before we can actually legally act on one of the options, you have to actually return the deposit to the tenant, even though you're in rent arrears. So it's a tough one to get your head around, but you know, we need to minimise this risk, get it right, go to court and get a successful case for you. Yeah, so I touched on this one. So licensing with councils. So the Welsh Housing Act and the council there, they're bringing it in from November 23rd. So if you have properties in those area, in that area, in that county, in that borough, you need to make sure you're licensed. As in for the rest of the UK, certain councils have implemented a landlord licensing scheme. So it's up to you to check this and to find out with your local authority, your local council, to see if there's a landlord licensing scheme in place. Because if you haven't, then you could face a fine. That's something to really check into. The second point, obviously, is EPC, gas safety, carbon monoxide monitors, just standard landlord duties. Now, these have all came into place. It's, you know, I suppose it's common sense in one respect. You want to keep up to date with your EPC. It lasts, obviously, 10 years and make sure it's highly energy efficient. Obviously, it's less cost for you and your tenant. Gas safety, obviously, again, you think it's a landlord's standard obligation to make sure everything's fine-tuned and checked, just as you would do with your own household. Carbon monoxide was a new one that came in, so every household has to have that. Again, you'd think it's common sense. The same with fire alarms and smoke detectors. Every property has to have these, and it's pretty standard, pretty common sense, but these are enforceable now. So it's all about health and safety of your tenants and ensuring that these standards are adhered to and that they're kept up to date with. I was going to say again, worst case scenario, you're facing fines, and if it's related to repairs, then you can't really serve any notices, and you're stuck. You have to wait, play the game, go back to the beginning and start again. I'll touch on prescribed information first on this slide. So prescribed information is like a dark art to some people when you speak to them about it, but it's came into force. It's always been part of the Housing Act, but it's really been enforced for the last couple of years. So landlords in receipt of a deposit have to register with a government scheme, serve the tenants with these specific certificates and prescribed information within 30 days of receipt of the money. It's as simple as that. Register, prescribed information, 30 days. If you fail to do that, and then it's served as undeemed, and then there's 3 times the rule of the deposit, obviously still is still out there now, so it can be really sticky for you. So ensure you register deposits. We have a lot of landlords speaking to us about not taking deposits and having this as an admin fee, then justifying that out. And because I think they've had the case in the past whereby they've had rent arrears, they've had a messy tenant, they just want them to go. So generally, it must like the tenant's thought process is, well, I'm going, it's my last month, I'm not bothered about the deposit, it's equal to 1 month's plus of rent, I'll just not pay my last month's of rent and assume that the landlord can automatically use that deposit to offset against it. You know, we see that happening a lot as well. So, you know, the biggest objection hurdle there to get around that is just literally have open dialogue and constant communication with your tenant. And I'm talking monthly. You know, the rent's come in. Thanks for sending over that rent. Is everything okay? I'll catch up with you on your quarterly or 6 monthly review or inspection. It's just having that open dialogue, constant communication, you know, a quick text, a quick phone call, you know, how's everything going, checking with them, you know, and thank them for obviously paying the rent on time. Little things like that make a big difference, and it's easy for the majority of us to just get stuck into, you know, our working life or what we do, but just having, you know, half an hour a month on your portfolio, just having a check-in with your tenants. Insurance premiums, I touched on this one, so 1st of October, insurance premiums, so any type of insurance product that we buy as a consumer will automatically increase to 10%, and that's insurance premium tax. There is a rumour that this will continue to increase, and it may also match the VAT value of 20% plus in the future, so I think, you know, who knows, but it's basically, it's almost doubled. So when you're working out your yields, obviously insurance is a big part of the costs of being a landlord. So, you know, insurance premium tax, insurance policies, I'd always have an increasing rate factor per year when calculating your yields based on the back of this. Okay, so another big one was right to rent. So they ran a trial with this in the Midlands region before it rolled out nationwide from the 1st of February this year. So we've had, 6 months of this now plus. In essence, it's asking the typical landlord or letting agent, if obviously they have the responsibility, but ultimately the responsibility is with the landlord and or managing agent, to act as border patrol, really, to check the status of any tenant if they have the right to rent in the UK. And it's as simple as that, really. You know, even if they're part of the EU, well, currently, or non-EU, there's no discrimination there. Every tenant type must be checked just to basically see if they qualify for this. Now, we have a full guidelines, a full checklist to help with this, so we release this free of charge. You know, it's just a standard guideline. You can actually get a similar type of guideline from any government website. As long as you do these checks, follow the guidelines, so do your diligence, meet the tenants face-to-face and see them, have the checks on the passports, you know, do your best to cover every single angle. If it looks like it's been tampered or fraud, and obviously raise the question. There's a Home Office passport checking URL. You can type in the details there of the tenant, and it'll come back as a pass or a fail. So we add that onto our referencing checks to help with this, but ultimately you have to see them face to face as best as possible. So when this came in, there was a lot of scaremongering within the marketplace of who can rent, who can't rent, and I think that's all settled down now, really. It's carrying as per usual. You know, our agents are working absolutely fine with it, which is absolutely superb. It's just landlords ensuring that you know that, because worst case scenario, the tenant may be an illegal immigrant, obviously they haven't got the right to reside within the UK. They could fall into arrears, they could sublet, it could be problematic for you, and then not only that, you could face a fine as well. As a double whammy, really, for not showing your due diligence in those checks in the first place. We had a webinar on this one in our February one, so you can access that from the Resource Centre. So I think it was a good half an hour, 45 minutes, all about right to rent. So if anyone wants to check that one and go into a lot more depth with right to rent, then by all means log into our system if a landlord or an agent, and you can download that copy there. The next point, obviously, again, it's widely talked about, landlord tax changes coming soon. and the most recent stamp duty changes. So a lot of agents were rushing to get deals through because the second home stamp duty tax actually came in as well. So it's an extra 3% plus for every second home. So more money for the government. Obviously, there's multiple reasons why they've done this as well. So I think it's all about controlling generation rent, really, and see if they can obviously increase the money that the government can have. And then who knows what they're going to do with it. I think I read somewhere that they've already generated $500 million since it came in. But it's like, what are they going to do with that money? Are they going to put it back into funding? They're going to build on greenfield sites. Are we going to be able to meet up with this demand and hit our quota of building 250,000 homes plus to help with this surge of demand for the tenancy market? So, there's a whole topic and piece around that. But yeah, there's more tax implications as well coming soon. And I think let's see how that releases, how that goes from November, and let's see. But there's a lot of talk again in the media about the Chancellor trying to wait. I mean, we're basically trying to stop that from happening, to try and we get this resurgence since Brexit into the housing economy, and to obviously get people more to invest more, really, and to put more money back into it, to create more landlords as well, responsible ones. Okay, so to summarise then, before I go on to the Q&A, I have gone over a lot of key points, a lot of legislation quite fast there, but we have covered a lot of them in existing webinars. So, summary, as landlords and agents, we're in this game for it to be a business. It's not a charity, it's 100% business. We're looking at this for medium to long-term, realistic revenue generator per yield wise, or assets for to pass on to future family members. So understanding your realistic yields, we can talk again a whole piece of this. Get everything right first time, focus on your investment, maximize your investment, work with quality letting agents who know, obviously, exactly know the market, they know what they're doing. Or if you're an experienced landlord and you have your time from that, do your research, understand legislation, and make sure you're on the ball with it, and keep that relationship open with your tenants. Ultimately, you've got to get it right first time. There's only so much due diligence checks you can do on your tenants. So, quality tenant referencing, meet them face to face if possible. They're moving into your home, in effect. So we try and treat every single tenant with the utmost respect. And obviously, once we're doing the tenant referencing checks, it's very high quality. But sometimes you can't predict the future, or you can't prevent from accident, sickness, or unemployment. So obviously, there's insurances that you can get to add on to that to help you with that as well. And it's really peace of mind. And it's like with any insurance. Understand legislation as well, because it's twofold. It's very frustrating from our point of view that there's so many landlords out there that just don't know the legislation and the pitfalls of being a landlord, obviously, and how drastically it can go wrong if the smallest thing's not done. So, there's plenty of landlord forums, blogs. We've got advice lines, we've got blogs and forums, but there's a hell of a lot of landlord forums out there. There's lots of landlord exhibitions as well. So, if anybody on the phone's serious about being a landlord, they need to be kept up to date, or just work with an agent, and ultimately they can do everything for you. And understand the available insurances and protection. There's a lot of insurances available now for landlords. It's just researching them, finding out what's fit for purpose and what's right for you. Because ultimately, everyone just assumes that there's just one type of insurance, and that's landlords' buildings insurance. And obviously, everybody needs that before they get the buy-to-let mortgage. It's just how many renew that moving forward as well. It's that risk of not doing that, and what type of tenants that are covered, because there's about 20 different reasons why a claim wouldn't be successful. But don't just base it on price when you see these adverts on the television. You need to really look into the policy wordings and find something that's unique for landlords, and then that's unique for your type of tenants or your type of dwelling as well. So there's you have to really take this job seriously as being a landlord, and or an agent as being a property management. Ultimately, protection is the ultimate goal here. Protection, maximum yield, having great tenants, building those relationships, and word of mouth that you're a good landlord, or that you've got good tenants, and obviously it'll thrive from there. Okay, questions and answers. Let me just open up the text box. Okay, I've got a lot of questions here. Let me just try and pick through top to bottom. My tenants paid a deposit in three installments. The first two are registered on time, but the third payment wasn't. Okay, but and I haven't served any certificates or prescribed information. What happens now? Oh, sorry, I did serve them, but not on the third one. Yeah, straightforward that one. So you wouldn't need to return back your first two deposits, just your third one, because in essence you've registered them two correctly. So you would need to return the third part, and then, well, instead of the whole lot. Yeah, so you wouldn't need to return the whole lot, just the third part, and then start again with the PI and relevant certificates. Okay, second one. I've served a section 21, and the tenant has signed to confirm receipt, but the post is incorrect. What do I do? The postal address is incorrect. Right, okay, so you need to complete this and then reserve the whole notice, because if the address is incorrect, the court actually will send documents as well. So if the court are going to be sending the wrong documents out, they can actually argue that they've never actually received them from the courts, and that could actually lead to a defence. So it sounds petty, but the smallest of details in these notices, section 21s or section 8s, can lead to a defence or any type of argument. Basically, you don't want to leave any stone unturned. You want to minimise all risk as possible, and not leave any opportunity for when your tenant gets there. There's a lot of TV programmes on, actually, and some of them are making it look so easy, you know, to get a tenant out. But there's a lot of savvy tenants out there as well, and obviously this programme works both ways. So tenants can see that they can actually get the free counsel and the free advice, and obviously look for a defence or look for a hole in anything whatsoever. And even if your paperwork's ultimately correct, at the end of the day, it's judge's discretion. So that could always always equal a negative as well. Next question. My tenants have left without returning the keys. Can I just change the locks? Again, no. This could be potentially classed as an unlawful eviction. If your tenant returns for whatever reason, you'd have to give them access. And it's a criminal offence, ultimately. We have had a few horror stories where... I remember one where the tenant actually went to prison. The landlord didn't know this, went round to do a routine inspection. Obviously no sign of him, obviously the belongings are still in the property, and knocked on a few neighbours and they said they haven't seen him for a while. You know, he just assumed he could change the locks, and that's it. Lo and behold, tenant comes back out within a couple of weeks after him doing this. I think he actually got fined £55,000 for that, so sounds madness, but unlawful eviction is very common still. Right to rent, let's look at this one. Why does my tenant need to prove the right to rent when I know they're British and have lived here all their life? You know, we get that question every single day. So basically, this new legislation from the 1st of February states that all tenants in rented property must provide documentation to prove their right to rent here, regardless of nationality. So there's no discrimination, basically. Another right to rent: while my tenant's passport is expired, what happens next? Expired passport. So if your tenant is British or any other EU country, those passports are acceptable if they're expired based on the right to rent guidelines. What we'd say, best practice, you just need to get the tenant to confirm the new dates, though, for your files. Okay, webinar recorded. Yes, all webinars are recorded and then uploaded to our landlord and agent resource centre. So to access this, either you're registered on our website already and you can log in and see these, or agents can also see these as well. Okay, I've got a tenancy up for renewal in 2 months. One tenant wishes to renew with a friend and the other is moving out. Do I need to check the passports of the new and existing tenant? So from all new tenancies from the 1st of February, this applies to them. So every new tenancy signed from the 1st of February, all new tenants would need to be checked. So even if it's a renewal and a new, so the answer is simply yes there. Okay, there's a hell of a lot more coming through now. Okay, I said a lot of them are in the similar gist. There's a lot coming through now. So thanks all for your questions. I've come to the end of the webinar before I finish, but if there's any questions that we haven't answered, then, you know, please send them through. I'll leave this open for 5 minutes at the end of this call as well, so keep your questions coming in on the right-hand panel. Okay. Surprise giveaway is a bottle of champagne. So obviously we'll just send it to your address and after this, next week. So again, put these answers in on the right-hand section. We'll just pick the winner from a hat, basically. So whose responsibility is it for right to rent? And what day did this legislation become law? So whose responsibility is it for right to rent? And what date this legislation become law? So pop those answers in. So we need two parts. So there's two parts to the question. So we need answers to both. And I'll leave this open for 5 minutes so you can get those questions across and those answers. So for any further information, and we've got a free advice line, which is on the screens now. And there'll also be a follow-up email sent by marketing just as a thank you and asking for feedback. And for any further webinars or topics or sessions that we've not currently done that you'd like to know or see, or if you want us to repeat anything as well, how did it work? Half an hour, daytimes, lunchtimes, evenings, what works best? So yeah, any other further questions as well that you think of after this webinar's finished, just drop an email back to that email that you'll get sent, or marketing@legalforlandlords.co.uk. And I'm Sim Sekhon, signing off, and thank you for attending this month's webinar. I look forward to seeing you on next month's. Thanks a lot.